life is. What's with your life? Running like a rare disease. Running like a rare disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Peace, family. Hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're having a good day. Hope you have a good day today. And hope you get a chance to do all the things that you want to do, need to do, have to do, should do, better do, must do, and not could do, because you're going to do it. And I hope the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But if it is not, I know you're going to get it done anyways, because that's just who you are. Going to have a good conversation today with, of course, it's Wednesday, and I'm going to call him my co-host. I'm going to tell him that, too. I'm calling my co-host, and that's Brother Franklin Jones. Appreciate him and all those who assist and help with making African Perspectives here on Time for an Awakening possible and making it happen, particularly my guy, my good friend, my brother, and that is Brother Kwaku, and I hope he's doing well. Of course, I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen live, you can go check it out now on Time for an Awakening, as well as Black Talk Radio Network, so we can have the archives posted, and you can listen to previously recorded programs. And, of course, if you want to engage in conversation and give us your African perspective, you can do so by calling 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832, and you can let us know what's on your mind, what is your perspective. On Monday evening, we have a new program, Acres of Diamonds, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. All times given are Eastern times. And after that, 8 to 9, I believe, is only a 1 hour podcast. And Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365. On Wednesday, this evening, from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC, Revive. Tomorrow, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, or Cooperative Economics, as we like to say. No, what we like to say is Family-Centered Economics. And, of course, the ULU broadcast will take place tomorrow evening. But more importantly, we have the ULU Cafe that's open, the ULU Cafe that opened on Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza, 2036 Sylvan Road in Atlanta, and open from Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., and then on Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and you can check out the ULU Cafe on the internet, CafeUlu.com, CAFEULU, CafeUlu.com. Or you can call if you're in the area and 470-788-8124, 470-788-8124, and, you know, get it together. Put your order in. And, of course, we have coffees. And we're going to be known for coffee. We're not going to be a restaurant. We're going to be a coffee house with delicious coffees from Africa. Delicious coffees from Africa. We're talking about coffees from Tanzania, Cameroon, Kenya, Ethiopia. We even have coffee from Brazil. Of course, you know, in the South America is the leading coffee producers now. But it was us. Coffee starts with us. You know. So check us. So check out Us Lifting Us tomorrow evening. Also, too, the summit, the fifth annual summit, will take place in March next month, 16th and 17th. The 16th, we'll have a meet and greet at the cafe. And then on the 17th, Saturday the 17th, the summit will be from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern. 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. It is free. And it'll be held at Atlanta Technical College in the Denard Conference Center, 1560 Metropolitan Parkway, Southwest in Atlanta. And if you are a vendor or would like to vend at the event, you can call 404-592-2780, 404-592-2780. And it's going to be a very exciting conference, very exciting. A lot of good information, a lot of good concepts, different concepts of how we're dealing with each other economically. So the Economic Summit, the fifth annual Power Summit, the Ujamaa Power Summit, the fifth annual Ujamaa Power Summit here in Atlanta, March 16th and 17th. On Friday, if it is Friday, and it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, you're right, brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, on Friday. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore. And Saturday afternoon, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank, from 4 to 6. And Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, it is not me. It is Sister POC. I know it is not me. It is Sister POC with Revive from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And Sunday evening, 7 p.m., time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. You know. Also, too, found out that I have never heard of Little John, and maybe some of the listeners have. He's a rapper here in the Atlanta area. And what Little John has done is what mostly all of these cats should do, whether it's here or on the motherland. He went to the motherland, and he is building some schools, some schools in Africa. And I'm not sure which country. I'll find out, because I like to give you that information and so to support the brother. And like I said, other entertainers and our people would note with who can do it. And it'd be even greater to do what we're doing with Us Lifting Us. Pull our monies together, and that's what we should do. Pull our monies together. So he's building schools. So big props to Little John for what he is doing. Today is February 21st. And February 21st is an interesting day for me. I have friends, good friends. In fact, one of them is my ex-wife, who was born on this day, born on February 1st. And my good friend, Brother Jim Winbush, who is a retired firefighter in Chicago. Me and him have traveled, you know, a number of places together, Ghana, Egypt, Cuba. So his birthday is today, so I'm wishing both of them a happy birthday. But the day has even deeper significance for me, because this is the day that Malcolm X was assassinated by the American government. You know, there are days when you think about these incidents and you will think about what you were doing and where you were at when you first heard about it. When I first heard it, I heard it on the radio in the car. I was in the car with my mother and my auntie from Chicago. And I heard it over the radio on that Sunday. And that's pretty much all I kind of remember about that. Just remember hearing it. And just remember, because it was not too long after that, reading Malcolm X's story as told to I'm getting a blank here. It'll come to me, you know. But I fell in love with Malcolm X. I fell in love with his spirit. I was more inclined to have that kind of feeling as opposed to what Dr. King was saying prior to him being assassinated by the American government, because I believe he was coming to that kind of conclusion himself. And imagine, I know it never happened, I know I have a t-shirt that I wear often with a picture of Malcolm and a picture of Martin together. And this is a picture of them in passing in a airport. I'm not sure exactly where, but they were in an airport, as it was stated, in an airport, and they were passing. They were and stopped to take a little photo op. They didn't get a chance to talk. There was no conversation, you know. But what did happen, of course, is that the conversation was, what if Malcolm and Martin had a chance to really sit down and strategize and come together and said, regardless of whatever differences that we may have personally, we're going to put them aside to work together to bring the people who you are with and the people who I'm with together. And make them understand it's not about being a Christian. It's not about being a Muslim, because we don't suffer. These Caucasians do not hate us and do what they've done to us because we're Christian or because we're Muslim. No, they do to us what they've done to us because we are African. See? And so given that unfortunate and harsh reality, if they could have got our people together and said, hey, let's all work together to take the yoke of the oppressor off our backs and off our necks and come together and pull our resources and do what we did right after in the 40s, in the 50s, when we could not go to the Caucasian theaters, hotels, restaurants, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. We got it. We built our own. Let's do what we did when, at the turn of the century, to build places like Tulsa, Oklahoma, Elaine, Arkansas, Rosewood, Florida, and all the many other places that we had a self-contained community, a real neighborhood, a hood with people who were neighborly, who looked after one another and shared, and money that was in our community circulated multiple times before it ever left. Imagine if they said, this is what we're going to do. And in this poor people's campaign, it ain't just about begging these Caucasians for some money and programs and jobs. It is about that promissory note that Dr. King talked about in one of his speeches, that we went to it had marked insufficient funds, but it's also about collecting on that, the reparations, the programs to be funded that would be initiated by us. This could have been the future for us had it not been the death of Malcolm and the death of Martin. I don't know about you, but I've always felt that Malcolm had a stronger spirit, because when you listen to his presentations prior to his assassination, no one got, at least I didn't, and if you can correct me if I'm wrong, got any sense that he felt that, although he had, in one speech when he was talking about Elijah Muhammad and exposing the hypocrisy, and it's, and a lot of times, brothers and sisters, you call it for what it is. You may not like that word, because I know that there are some people who have a leader, teacher, and guide that they're so in love with and so enamored with that to they don't want to hear anything bad about that person. So when Malcolm exposed the hypocrisy, or Elijah Muhammad being a hypocrite, saying one thing and doing another, and more deeply impregnating young girls within the Nation of Islam, you know, I love the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I think that, once again, the philosophy that they were talking about, I gravitated more to than the philosophy of integration. But then again, something should have happened within that situation where El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz could have stayed within the nation and worked that out. But it is what it is. And so the atmosphere that where Malik Shabazz could be easily killed was created by the Nation of Islam. I do not believe that the Nation of Islam killed him. I stated at the top of the program that the government of the United States killed him. And I maintain that. But the Nation of Islam made it easy for the government of the United States. When the government of the United States put those two plants within the New Jersey Mosque, the Newark Mosque, that people hadn't that known before. And, of course, you know there's all kinds of informants and so forth. If you had a chance to look at Independent Lens on public television just a few days ago, a couple of days ago, they had a piece on with, on Monday, in fact, a piece on the Black Panthers. And they showed the informant, and they showed pictures of him within the inner circle of the Black Panther Party. Well, of course, they had the same thing. In fact, one of the guards who was supposed to protect Malcolm was a New York police officer. So, once again, you have the atmosphere being created because of the split and the words being, you know, the bombing of his home, the phone calls, all of the harassments, all of these things. But one thing he said, when I was out of the country and I was refused entry to another country, he knew that all of these things that were being done was not the fruit of Islam. Because he helped train the fruit of Islam. He knew the FOI couldn't do that. And I know that Minister Louis Farrakhan has stated that anybody who would do this is worthy of death. That's all he said. And I don't believe that that Minister Louis Farrakhan had any hand, once again, in killing El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. The government of the United States is the responsible entity that killed Dr. Martin Luther King and El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. I'm firm on that. Anybody have anything different? If you want to give us a call at 215-490.
This call is being recorded.
215-490-9832. We have a caller. 6267. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Brother Oshie. Brother Ralph.
Hey, Ralph. How are you doing? How you doing today, brother?
I can't complain, Brother Oshie. And I know the day you was going to give your observation of that movie.
Yes.
Black Panther. So I'll be waiting to hear your observation.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, you talking about Brother Malcolm X today. Let me tell you something, Brother Oshie. I just got finished talking to my wife about this. And I said, you know what? I said, if you need a movie to make you feel good about being who you are, then something's wrong, right? But then I got to remember, Brother Oshie, you know, I read books on Malcolm X. I listened to a lot of his speeches. But when Brother Spike Lee put that movie out in the 90s, I got to be a little bit of a hypocrite if I say that about anybody, because I felt good being a black man seeing that brother. You understand what
sure.
I'm saying?
So, no doubt.
Yeah, and so I'm just going to say like that. Listen to me calling the pot kettle black, because that was me when I saw that movie, and that was my son when he saw that movie, because his eyes opened, and he was like, oh, man. So, you know, Malcolm X to me is like that older brother, that father, that, I mean, it's like I never met the man, never walked with him or whatever, but everything I seen about that brother, I got nothing but love for him. And the other brother, and he don't get too much, nobody talks about this brother, but he gave our people the solution, and that's why he was murdered in his driveway. That was Medgar Evers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
I never met either one of these brothers, but they gave us a solution, and that's the reason why they were murdered.
Sure.
That's the reason why they were murdered, Brother Oshie.
Sure. And even though Medgar Evers was killed by the Klan, and finally they were the individual who was truly responsible for his murder was finally brought to justice about 30 something years later, you know, and I think he died a few years ago in prison, was finally brought to justice, mm-hmm. you know. But what happened, I think that the Nation of Islam, because of what it was doing and what it was saying within the Muhammad Speaks and other issues that are out there, made the atmosphere easy for this government. Because number one, the government is always playing one side against the other. That's what they do, uh-huh. divide and conquer. And so made it very easy. And of course, there's always Negroes who are willing uh-huh. to do the government's bidding. That's why these agent provocateurs that come into organizations and say this and say that and become disruptive. Just like just recently I read about a plant, so to speak, in the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, but that's not surprising, you know.
No.
Getting back to Spike Lee's movie, the only part that I didn't like was towards the end, where he was all melancholy, you know, because I don't think that was him. I didn't sense that about him. I sensed that he was strong to the end, you know.
Right.
You know, but he knew that what he was saying and what he was doing, you know, because mm-hmm. what caused his death. He was a very principled man. I think that's why I loved him. And then, you know, that story that when he put that tape recorder under the couch, when the FBI came to his door, two agents of the FBI came to his door, they're sitting on it, he's taping them. And what they want to do is have him turn over information about Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam. And he insisted that I won't give you nothing. See, the thing about him and why I gravitated to him, because the kind of man that he was principled, he had character, he was not a sellout, he didn't sell our people out, you know, he was strong in his convictions, and he understood that this cracker is not going to do for us what we should be doing for ourselves. He wasn't about begging them, he was about us doing for us, so that's why I kind of love it. It was, in fact, you know, they didn't call it Pan-Africanism then, but to me, he was a staunch Pan-Africanist.
Right. But let me tell you something, Brother Oshin. You brought up something a little earlier. You talked about how he exposed his leader and teacher. Now, he didn't really want to do that. He wanted to have a conversation with that man. You know what I mean? Because he had a natural love for our people.
Right.
But I think when he seen that this man was a pedophile, and I have a book written by the brother, I forget his name, but it's called The Rise and Fall of the Messenger, Elijah Muhammad.
Wow, okay.
This man, let me tell you something. Not only did he cause harm to those young sisters, but he caused harm to his wife.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the thing about it, you know, yeah, I know that, and see, this is the danger of religion, because we place people where they should not be placed. Now, I don't even believe, I'll be honest with you, Brother Oshie, I love Brother Malcolm X. I always had a problem with the Nation of Islam, and the reason why I have a problem with that, they'll come and they attack me and you, but I don't know of any incidents where they went and attacked the so-called devil. they even attacked. See, this is the problem I had with them. They even attacked the older brother down there in Atlanta.
Yeah,
and I forget his name, but they attacked him. See, this is what they do to us.
Yeah.
They attack us, but I have nothing on paper that shows where they attack the so-called devil.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, you know, I always had a problem with them and their concept of religion. And I'm glad that their brother, now when that brother, you're right, when he took that trip to Mecca, he came back, I think he was even a little bit, he was trying to find himself because he found out he was being lied to.
Right.
So if I'm a practice something, let me try to find out what I'm really practicing, which made me love him even more. Even though I don't agree with Islam, I agree with what he did. This is fake what y'all teaching me. So let me go and try to find out exactly what y'all are teaching so I can bring it back and be even stronger, but I'm still going to be here and I'm going to teach my people.
That's a good perspective. Ralph, that's a good perspective. You're really on. And no, really.
Yeah, I love that brother, man.
Yeah, me too.
And Mega Evers too. We cannot forget that man. Because that man told him, don't you buy from the Klan. They own everything.
Yeah.
Don't buy from them. Don't use their debt. Don't go to them. Yeah. And you can see that he hit a nerve because they had to kill him.
Yeah.
Because the people listened to that brother.
Well, he was a good organizer. You know?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. So I just had to call in, Brother Oshie, and I'm waiting. I'm waiting for your perspective on that.
Okay.
Movie.
Well, it's coming up.
I told you mine.
Okay. And you can reiterate it when we get into that conversation. I'll be looking forward to it. Okay.
Yes, sir, Brother Oshie.
All right. All right.
I'll be listening.
Peace, brother.
Peace out.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that, Brother Ralph. Always listening. Always contributing. Waiting for my good friend and brother, Brother Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix. And if you want to check him out online, you can go to the Black People, not Peoples, the Black People Matrix.com, the Black People Matrix.com, and check out some of the narratives that Brother Frank has put out there, Franklin Jones. We were talking about the movie. I went to see the movie last night or yesterday afternoon, to be honest, and came away with some interesting observations, and can't wait to get off into this dialogue. You know, we have another caller, area code 602. Yep.
Yes.
Hey, yes, Brother Marcus, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right, good brother. I'm doing all right. You know, I had an opportunity to sit at the feet of one of the people who actually knew Malcolm. His name was Robert Harris. He used to be in an organization by another brother called Carlos Cooks. Carlos Cooks, he picked up the baton after Garvey. When Garvey passed away in 1940, this brother used to be a part of the UNIA. He picked up the baton off of Garvey and ran with the program, but you didn't hear a lot about him because he avoided the news media. You see, he said, look, let's get down with the program instead of just a personality, you know, charismatic leadership, because he said that was the problem in the Garvey movement, was when Garvey was a charismatic leader. So when they picked Garvey off, the entire organization fell apart because they didn't have a cadre. So he was saying, look, let's develop a cadre, a leadership, instead of just a personality.
Well, you know, well, you know, Brother Marcus, that's what I advocate. That's what Dr. Clark was talking about. We don't need charismatic leaders. We need a charismatic program. We need a cadre of leadership, like you stated, Marcus. Now, we can have a spokesperson, and that individual can be very articulate, very personable, very all these good positive things. And, of course, the system will say, well, let's kill him. Or her. And then the movement will die. But see, the bottom line is that person is out there as a spokesperson, he or she.
Exactly.
And if they are killed, we got somebody stepping up right away. And then another person stepping up right away. You see?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's a cadre. So if you listen to Malcolm speeches, you see, Malcolm was evolving, you know, because they were always talking about this, the wheel, you know, and the alien spaceship and stuff like that. But under the table, he was being fed information by the nationalists, because it was the Carlos Cooks groups who was doing his printing for him and stuff like that. So they were feeding him information. You see, and that's why Malcolm was evolving. He was, you know, coming out of that, you know, Ezekiel and the wheel and this, and then speaking more on nationalist, you know,
term. Right.
But again, you don't hear about Carlos Cooks because he avoided the news media. But there is a good book out. It's called Carlos Cook and Black Nationalism, from Garvey to Malcolm, and it's by Robert Harris. You probably can get it in your public library in the humanities section. I saw it on Amazon the other day for almost $300. So,
whoa.
You know,
whoa.
Yes, but it's out. You know, his name is Carlos Cooks and Black Nationalism, from Garvey to Malcolm, by Robert Harris. So if you can get it, he will give you the from a black orthodox black nationalist perspective, from the, you know, from what happened in back in the day up until Malcolm X, you know. So you know, but you know, I wanted to just say this. You know why I like your program, brother? Because your program is orthodox. It's not flim flam. You know, it's not.
Well, I appreciate,
you know,
that.
Some people program flim flam. It's not consistent. Yeah. Because I was listening the other day, and to some other program, and you know, they were telling you, well, you know, when you advocate back to Africa, you know, for black people, they will say, well, you know, that's not a solution. You know, where you gonna run to that? You know that, and I'm like, well, hold on now, you know, the Asian, he knows that Asia is his homeland, you know. Europe
right.
is his homeland, you know, and they don't have no problem organizing, you know, as Garvey said, he said, Africa for the African, Asia for the Asiatics, Europe for the Europeans. And, you know, I'm like, but when we advocate Africa for the African, they say, no, that is not a solution. You know, you're running away, you know, really, what is going on? You know,
Brother Marcus, to me, it is the only solution.
That's what I say.
It is the only solution, you know. And so I agree with you, because you've come on this program
since I started on Time for an Awakening, you and Jay and a few others, Brother Joe out of Philly, all of you good brothers, and I appreciate it because you understand clearly the solution for African people is African people coming together and reclaiming our Africanness and working with the brothers and sisters on the continent to restore ourselves. That is the only solution. Otherwise, we'll always be begging, pleading with others.
Exactly. They had one character came on and he said, well, you know, Africa for the African, Garveyism is not the solution. I asked, okay, if Garveyism is not the solution, then what is the solution? Well, I don't know what the solution is. But so you don't know. You say, oh, this ain't the solution. We ask, what's the solution? Oh, I don't know what the solution is. Well, then you just shut up. You know what I'm saying? You know? But, it's this inconsistency, yeah. It's this flim-flam, it's this bipolar, dual consciousness that Du Bois talk about, you know?
Right.
And you have to watch those intellectuals, someone who was intellectuals.
Sure. Well, you know, on this program, I've dedicated my life and my time for the rest of I have to broadcast on this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern information about our independence, our self-determination, our liberation, and our sovereignty for us as a people. Because to me, you know, I know there are not a lot of programs that are talking about this. I've often asked the question, and maybe Marcus, you can help me, because I've often asked the question, is there a program even on, I know there's not a program like this on commercial radio, because they couldn't have it on commercial radio, because all those big corporations wouldn't fund talking about how they've been ripping us off and killing us in with their products. So you couldn't have that. So then I said, is there a program like this on satellite? And to find out, no. So here on the internet, this program is dedicated and committed to helping free our minds by providing the information that will help us do that. The information that we're going to be talking about on this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and everything will be done from that perspective. No matter what the discussion is, we're looking at it from our vantage point, from our worldview, from our perspective. And is it good for us? Is it good for African people? That's what we'll do. We'll expose all of the BS, no matter who it is. Because the bottom line is that we, as an African people, must be free. We must be self-determining. We must be sovereign. We must be able to determine for ourselves what our lives are going to be, how we're going to function, and so forth. You know, but I know there's a lot of us, though, Brother Marcus, you know, we just...
I appreciate you, brother, and I appreciate that. I'll definitely keep listening and supporting your program. Thank you so much.
No, thank you, Brother Marcus. Appreciate you too, dear brother. You have a blessed day. Peace. I really do thank Brother Marcus and all the people who call Brother Ralph, and I got to give much love to Brother Ralph because that's how we got on Time for an Awakening. So, you know, and of course, Jay and Brother Joe, all the people and sisters and brothers that listen to Time for an Awakening that Brother Elliot has established. So got to give him love. Also, too, Scotty Reed with Black Talk Radio Network. He's the one that has worked to provide all these programs. So go to blacktalkradionetwork.com and see all of the programs that are available for you to network with and to listen to. So... Black Panther, the Black Panther, you know, I think, in fact, you know, I went to see it with my daughter, and so she said, oh, he's there in Oakland. I said, yeah, the Black Panthers were started in Oakland. That's right, you know, you know, because he, one of the characters, which is the character that was allegedly abandoned in America, lived in Oakland. And that is Eric Killmonger, that he calls himself. That wasn't his name, that African name.
And, of course, his father was killed by his brother, which is the father of T'Challa, which is the main character of Black Panther. But we're going to get off into that right now. My good brother and friend, Brother Frank, are you there?
I'm here, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Brother Frank. Listen, I said, because we've been doing this now every Wednesday, that you are my co-host on Wednesdays. How about that?
I appreciate the honor. That's an honor. I thank you for that.
You bet. So we're going to get off into discussion, but first I want to get some perspective from you, if you can, on El Hajj Malik El Shabazz. Today is the day, February 21st, 1965, that he was assassinated, killed by the American government. He wasn't killed by the Nation of Islam. The Nation of Islam helped create the atmosphere by which he could be killed very easily. And I think that must be understood. But everybody believes that the Nation of Islam did it. And I think if you go back and check out some Tony Brown's journal, and he did an expose on this, who really killed Malik Shabazz. Yes. And okay, and he points that out. So if you can, probably go on YouTube and go to Tony Brown's journal and look at that.
Yes.
But, you know, so this day, like his birthday, May 19th, are special days for me personally because of how as I grew up, I gravitated to what Malcolm was bringing, what Malcolm was saying, you know. So, and that's why
it actually saddened me when you reminded me that this was that date. It actually saddened me. I felt a sadness. You know, and what you were saying about who killed him, we do know if the Nation of Islam was truly involved with his assassination, that story would have been out a long time ago. The fact that the story still is covered up because we know it's the government. It's a lot higher than the Nation of Islam, you know?
Yeah.
So...
And he said it himself. He said when he was denied entrance to a country, when he was, I think, after making Hajj and so forth, he was traveling around Africa, Northern Africa, and, of course, into Europe. And he was denied entrance. I can't remember which country it was. He knew that the Nation of Islam could not do that. You know, he knew the fruit of Islam, the FOI, couldn't do that because he helped train the FOI.
Matter of fact, that was stated in the Malcolm X movie where Denzel Washington character was talking on the phone, I believe, to his wife, but he says, Malcolm X says, "Nah, this is not the Nation. I trained him. I know they're capable of. This is higher than the Nation of Islam."
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right?
It was stated. Yes, it was stated in the film. Okay. But I think because people see black faces shooting, they choose to gravitate towards the Nation.
Right.
Of Islam, but in reality, we know how the white man does it. He finds those black men and he hires them, he pays them to go and do it, you know. And sometimes you find black men who have felony records or who are in trouble and offer them immunity to do this on top of payment, you know. So,
sure.
Yeah, sure.
You know, because, I mean, I'm quite sure they could get in. Just like I was watching the piece on the Black Panthers, you know, and their formation in 1966 and the rise of Huey and Bobby Seals and all the other ones, Fred Hampton out of Chicago and whatever. And they had these informants. They showed a couple of individuals who were informants. They showed them mixed in with the group, you know, and then had them talking about, you know, their involvement, you know. So there is no doubt that this government has what it needs to maintain itself. Because they have enough Negroes, they have enough informants, they have enough of those kinds of individuals. That's why it's incumbent upon us that when you form an organization, you make sure that the people who are in your organization are legitimate people that will help the goals and aspirations of your organization. Otherwise, if your organization is doing something very positive, it could be going down. Because why? You allowed individuals who, although they may look like us, and they may say some of the things that you might want to hear, but their mindset, just like that brother on Elliot's show this past Sunday on Time for an Awakening, the brother Dr. Jerome Fox, we're addicted
to white. We're addicted to white. And that's pretty much too what we're all the time saying about the mind, because that's the same thing about his book. It deals with the psychological problems that we have with ourselves, because we cannot purge ourselves. We cannot step outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us to look at ourselves for who and what we are, you know. But let's
speaking of mindset, I'm talking from downtown Atlanta, even downtown Atlanta. I just ran into this woman I just met. She was talking about the Black Panther film. And she was talking about how much she hates the Killmonger character. And I mean, listening to the mindset, it's like, wow, the European mindset into the black body. It's incredible. And it's real, you know?
Oh, very much real.
I mean, just the fact that we have black women who insist on permanent hair or wearing weave, and we have black men who insist on their women permanent hair wearing weaves and bleaching their skin, it shows that the mindset is there. It does exist, you know?
Oh, no doubt.
I was having a conversation with a Nigerian brother not too long ago, and he said to me, what's wrong with us having our wives bleach their faces and wear weaves? We want our women looking good also. And I was like, wow. You know?
Because that's what...
We want our women to look good too.
Because the Caucasian has imposed the image of what a standard of beauty is upon the world.
Yes.
And but it has more profound effect on African people because of what we have gone through. Because, you know, the Caucasian didn't beat down Asians with their slanted eyes or this or that.
Yes.
But they beat us down with the image of us as being dark skinned, nappy hair, big nose, this, that, and the other, all of these things, and you are constantly bombarded with that until the point is that you hate what you see. You hate.
And if you notice, often when they cast people in movies, they tend to cast the mixed blacks. Blacks who tend to be light-skinned, or, you know, so you see them picking those that look more like them. Yeah, so we see it. Yeah. All around.
Well, that's one of the best things about the movie is that they were all pretty much brown and dark skinned people. They were highly melanated. I loved it. They were highly melanated.
Yes. When was the last time you saw a movie where there was highly melanated black people and it wasn't about slavery?
Yeah.
When's the last time you seen it?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, when I saw all those beautiful sisters on the screen and it was all highly melanated, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, it was nice to see that. It was refreshing to see that.
It really is. And even though, although I could never be mistaken for looking Caucasian, but I'm one of those high yellow kind of brothers. But if you saw me, you would see, because you know me, we've seen each other, so you know how I could not be mistaken for a brother. Let's put it that way. But by the same token, I love seeing our dark skin. And, you know, I am who I am. So that's just that, you know. Could I love to have been somebody else or done something? Oh, maybe, hey. But I am who I am. I feel good about who I am and how I look.
But I'm going to tell you something about that subject before we go. I never judge my brothers or sisters based upon the melanin in their skin. You know why I do not? Because my hero is Malcolm X. And a person I detest is Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas is a highly melanated brother. And Malcolm X had freckles and red hair.
Right.
So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. So Good point, brother. And it's the same thing. You know, Malcolm said, you know, I'm looked this way because of the rapist blood in my body, which I can't stand. I can't. And so my contention is that I love us, period. Light, bright, damn near white to blue black. I love the whole spectrum of who we are, you know. Yeah. That's why this is a good one, man. You know, the Dominican Republic and the color struck and the feeling of not wanting to be African that is so deep in them, causing them to do all kinds of crazy stuff. And the prime example has been shown is Sammy Sosa. Because really, mostly all of the Dominican, they play baseball in the Dominican Republic phenomenally. They have many baseball players in the major leagues who are from the Dominican Republic. But all of these cats marry Caucasian.
Yes.
or very light-skinned yeah. women. They're dark-skinned, all of them. Mariano Duncan, Big Poppy Ortiz. These are brothers from the Dominican Republic, which shares the island, the eastern part of the island with Haiti. But yet, they put a thing out that if you are dark-skinned, we want your papers. We want to see that you were born here in the Dominican Republic, because if you're not, then you're Haitian, and we're going to kick you onto the other side of the island. That's why I will never, ever go to the Dominican Republic again. But they're also the ones that had this colorism consistently pushed, you know. So check this out, Brother Frank. So a couple of years ago, in the Little League World Series, the Dominican Republic was playing Uganda. Uganda made it to the Little League World Series because the African countries compete with Europe to go to the Little League World Series. You know, Japan, Taiwan, all of Korea, they go to Little League. So they won. Uganda won. Some Caucasian came to Uganda, and because we're naturally athletic, you know, show them how to play baseball and so forth. They didn't have a lot of the good equipment and so forth, but they won. And they had a trip to Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and they were going to play their first game against the Dominican Republic. And here all of these melanated, dark-skinned brothers against the Dominican Republic. I have never felt so good in my life when they beat them. Because baseball is the national, I mean, that is their game. And these brothers from Uganda, these dark-skinned brothers from, I bet you they was mad as hell in the Dominican Republic for getting beat, you know? But it's also, too, another pride I felt was Chicago, the Jackie Robinson team that played in the Little League World Series about 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. There was not one high yellow brother on that team. All of these cats was bad. Of course, they did not win the Little League World Series. They won the American part of it, but I think they got beat by China or Japan or whatever. And then later from some technicalities, their American title was stripped because of they had a player who was outside of the district or some madness like that. But to me, nothing could ever stop that. That was a great feeling, and it was a good time, because what was happening in Chicago, which is still happening in Chicago, and that's the consistent murder rate, but Chicago needed something to rally around to make them feel good, and that Little League World Series did it. Brothers and sisters came together. They cheered for them. I mean, you wouldn't believe it. It was outstanding. We're gonna take a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the Black Panther. Okay? You bet. This is African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're going to take a break with my co-host, Brother Franklin Jones. We'll be right back.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. Ayo. Tell me that you love me, maybe that will cancel out all the wrong ways you rub me. I can't understand why you wanna act ugly when I know that you miss me. Kiss me, baby, hug me. The thoughts of a human are so hard to bear when the uncivilized enterprise in despair. Video clips make us shake our derrieres while the big screen screams. Throw your guns in the air. Hollywood, Hollywood, we all want the glamour. Glitz, diamonds, and gold. Tricks, abracadabra. What's the matter, copper ladder? That really makes me wonder how we manage to move around in the world of anacondas. Gotta think like a chess player, Mr. Taxpayer. Seek the truth, we abuse you, suffer soothsayer. School fools on YouTube and chat room players. Cartoons and buffoons of all assorted of flavors. You used to diss my mama when you called the ancient mama. Must have seized, got a need, so you call me mountain climber. Quest feed the need of the Da Vinci code finder. Proceed to lead as the original designer. Ayo, 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 ayo. and OGs. Peace to all my peeps who could keep up. Cause I'm leaping over them boundaries. Indigestion in the belly of the beast. New direction, heading straight for the east. You know, life is painstaking when they have what's ancient. So who's that wrecking that microphone? Shot blessed, giving headrest to backbones. F-popper, if he was a rolling stone. Cause sisters know how to read up. Damn right we are. So what's your sexuality? Intellectual abnormality. It's your religion causing them casualties. So bow down to the flower, to your god to woa. Made your slave ships, played your woman like a hoa. Wrote it in your books and we bought it in the stores. Hickory, dickory, slippery dots. Go to bed with the feds and they have crooked cops. Put the lead to the head if their agenda stops. So keep a bulletproof goose and a crew of hard rocks. Ayo, ayo, ayo. Ayo, 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 ayo. He's wheezing and she's coughing. We all stuck in the land of the lost, man. They trying to stick us into them coffins. So proceed to lead with caution. Misdemeanors getting meaner and his grass ain't greener. First or second class plane crash, got Jesus. Y'all need gas from who? These to beamers. Watch them as they laugh and take us to the cleaners. Read between the lines if you want some definition. They fired the grid so we led through intuition. Better watch your kids when on the net they fishing. How you rocking rims you ain't got a pot to piss in? Lord have mercy on these folks. They got a mind so blind and we all got jokes. We just want piece of bacon from that stroke. Divorce rate sky high cause we ain't evenly yoked. Yo. Signs number 9, numerology completion. Beeping through your mind like blinds at all Phoenician. Seek hard, you find what I find I'm keeping. Don't be alarmed, just keep your arms reaching. Ayo, 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 ayo.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And you are listening to Sister Shabless. Ayo, ayo. African Perspectives here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And after that, Let's Buy Black 365. On Wednesday, tonight, Sister POC. Sister POC, revive. On Thursday, tomorrow night, we got Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, or like we have to say, family-centered economics. On Friday, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard will tell you it's time for an awakening on Friday from 8 p.m. until on Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, 4 p.m. to 6, and on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC, and then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And if you want to call and talk to anybody on those programs or call and talk with us, with me and my co-host, Brother Frank Jones, that number is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Brother Frank, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing fantastic, my brother. I wanted to state a disclaimer before we start talking about the film, The Black Panther. There's this big frenzy going around about Black Panther, and we're not a part of that frenzy. You and I are coming from a perspective, from an analytical perspective, and discussing about how the imagery is groundbreaking and how it affects pros and cons. So I don't want people to say that you and I are just getting caught up on the Black Panther hype. That's not what happened with us.
Exactly.
We're talking from as conscious men.
Exactly.
About the subject.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And you are most correct. Mm-hmm. You are most correct. You know, there's some things that you can't, you know, dispute. Number one, the fact is that Marvel and Walt Disney, with seriously deep pockets, I think they spent $200 million
on this project. Yes. And it's already it's already recaptured that. I think with with it showing statewide and worldwide, it's already brought in $400 million. It broke records. It broke records here in the United States for a 3-day, 4-day, because I think they counted Monday because it was President's Day as a 4-day weekend. But it broke records for a 3-day or 4-day showing this on the weekend. There is no doubt that the $200 million that it costs for the production is outstanding, with all the technology, all the equipment, all the visualizations. In fact, I went to see it in 3D. I told my daughter, let's go see it in 3D. I want stuff coming at me, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you look at all of it, all the visuals, and so you cannot dispute that. But I think what me and you are discussing is, what is the message of the movie? What is it conveying? How is the characterizations and what happens with them? What are they saying? And what is the, you know, because a lot of times, you know, a lot of our people, we go to movies to be entertained. It is escapism from the reality of our situation. And we don't want to think too deep. We just want to deal with the surface. We want to be entertained. You know, for me, pretty much, I guess, how I've been as a person who wants to find out and know, particularly how does it relate to us as African people, I've always looked at movies and found out, what is the meaning? What are they trying to say? And as a consequence, I've come up with a list of movies that I feel that our people should look at and watch simply because of what the message is. In fact, we're going to maybe one day, if you got some movies and I do, and I'm going to ask the listening audience if there are some movies that they think that we should be watching, or there's something that of importance or some incidents in those movies that we need to think about and highlight, we should do that, you know, at a later program, of course, you know. But we're going to talk about the Black Panther today, you know.
I think the message in the film, or the core portion of the film that attracts you and I to it, is a testimony. Is a testament to the young director and writer, Ryan Coogler. I listened to an interview he did. And the brother, he's only 20 years old. I was very impressed. He said he's always wanted to go to Africa. He said when he was young, his wife who's been to Africa, and you know, in college years, and he always wanted to go to the motherland. So he said once he made the agreement with Disney to do the film, he told Disney right away, well, before I do the film, I have to go to Africa. And they paid him to go to Africa. He said he went to Africa, he started meeting the people down there doing it. And he came back and he wrote it. So the brother, the core message about our situation comes from the brother. Now, what Disney did, allowed him to they stay close to his original writing, but then they add their portions in. But I think the part of we're attracted to that we notice is coming from the young brother. You know, I was very impressed with his interview.
I was too. I was impressed with the fact that he said he stayed a good amount of time in Africa, looking at the culture, looking at the people, looking at the landscape, and so forth, as he was putting this movie together. And you're right. I mean, the idea of an isolated country within Eastern Africa, whether it's Ethiopia, Kenya, anywhere around that, Chad, whatever, but the idea that this country has isolated themselves and advanced technology because of an asteroid that provided them with a mineral that is so dynamic, you know, vibranium, provided them with the vibranium that now they could be technologically advanced beyond anybody's wildest dreams. Also, too, could be used to defend or to attack any other entity that is there because of what you can do with the vibranium, you know.
Yeah.
And as you see, the whole idea was for the CIA and any other individuals who want to get vibranium and use it in weaponry, Because if you did that, your weaponry would be superior to anything else on the planet, you know. And so the part that you saw with the CIA Caucasian and the terrorist Caucasian Klaus or Claw, you know, when he was broken out of being captured by Killmonger because they wanted to get the vibranium. If you remember, Killmonger goes to the museum and the Caucasian lady who was, I don't know if she was the curator or a docent or whatever, you know, she says, you know, this is this and this is that. He said, no, it's not. You know, no, it's not. This is from Wakanda. She had no idea, you know. But, of course, that's just like an incident that happened to me some years ago. I'm in a flea market in New Orleans. And this Caucasian, I've overheard this. He picks up an ankh. You know, he picks up an ankh. And he tells the Caucasian who wants to look at him buy it, yeah, it's from Greece. I turned my head and I said, no, it ain't. That's not a Greek symbol. That's an African symbol. That's that is the oldest symbol in the world. It predates Christianity's cross by thousands of years. That's the ankh. It's the African symbol of life. The oval part of the top. Say? Huh?
What did he say when you said that?
No, he didn't say a damn thing. Neither of them. You know, they didn't say nothing. Except when I got done, one of the other Caucasians who was going to buy it says, oh, okay. But sometimes you just need to check them. You know, you just need to check them, you know. Because I said, no, that's the ankh. That's the oldest symbol. That's the symbol of life, you know. And so in the movie dealing with the Black Panthers, and you can join this conversation, brothers, by dialing 21 and sisters, please. By 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832, and you can have conversation with me and Brother Frank and give us your idea, your perspectives on the Black Panther movie. And if you saw it, what did you think? You know. But one of the things that, Brother Frank, that interests me deeply in terms of the movie is the imagery that you see. Because, you know, the technology now is so deep, you know. What did you think about the sisters, his guard?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I've been studying the white man's propaganda for over 20 years. I've written two books on the subject of propaganda in movies. And my excitement comes from that knowledge of propaganda. You always see it. But the image of the women, the image in this movie was so reversed from what we normally are programmed to see. I don't think I could remember recalling seeing a movie with all these strong, intelligent, beautiful chocolate sisters in a movie that wasn't about slavery.
Right.
You know? So
right.
I love the imagery, and they weren't stereotypes. I thought it was fantastic. There was a particular scene when they went out to South Korea.
Right.
And the was wearing a weave, and she was talking about she hated the weave, and she threw it off her head.
Yes,
that was a message in there. That it was an empowering, it was a pro-black message in that throwing the wig off her head. So
right.
I enjoyed all of those representations of women, you know, and how the women were depicted. You know, there are critics right now who are. I read something just yesterday, and they're saying. If the movie's so diverse, why did it? They didn't show the women as being lesbians. They wanted that in the movie. That's why I'm glad they didn't put it in the movie.
I'm so glad. I am so happy they didn't have any lesbians, any homosexuals, any gay scenes.
Yeah.
Let me say this, Brother Frank, because I am not homophobic. But
don't worry about the word homophobic. I'm gonna tell you something. That's a tactic. Those who disagree with their ideology, they give you a title and they impose it upon you. So now you find all the homophobic, they give the name a disease. That's a part of psychological warfare. Like long before the term homophobic came out, there's a term called negrophobic and negrophobia. But they don't use that because they want to sustain their racism towards us. But if you can impose that, oh, you're negrophobia, it creates this disease where, okay, you don't want to stand on your ideology. So there's no need to say, oh, I'm not homophobic. That's because that's part of their programming. They impose their, they define it as a disease if you disagree with the ideology or the lifestyle or right. You're homophobic.
Right.
And the programming, they teach that in school. My son was in the third grade, fourth grade. I said, son, it's time we talked about our views of homosexuality, our value system, what we feel. And I said, son, we believe that God, the old saying, we don't believe in Adam. We believe in Adam and Eve, you know, not Adam and Steve. My son looked at me and said, Dad, I learned in school about people like you. Dad, you're homophobic. My son, the school already prepared my son for me. And my son said, Dad, you're homophobic. I said, well, you learned that in school.
Yeah.
So I always avoid that word homophobic. It's bullcrap.
Well, let me just say this, is that I don't have fear of homosexuals.
Yes.
And nor am I condemning. I've stated this many times in this program. I'll continue to do so.
Yeah. What I don't condemn either.
Exactly. What consenting adults do in the privacy of their own home is their business. I put emphasis. Yes. I put emphasis on consenting and yes. on adults. And I mean yes. somebody who's 18 who can make a decision. Maybe, hell, I'll even go 21. But the bottom line is they're consenting and they're adults. And I don't want to see it. So in the privacy of your own home, keep that in your privacy of your own home because I don't want to see it.
I agree. What offends me is when society tries to impose
yes.
a lifestyle on me.
Yes.
Trying to impose it. Oh, this is normal. No, I don't go after anyone. I don't say nothing to you. I'm not speaking negatively about you, but don't try to impose it on me.
Right.
Try to impose that on my, you know,
because
or insert it into my movie as part of the indoctrination of my mind.
Right.
You know, that's what I'm offended.
Well, supposedly there is in the comics, there is yeah. a series or a part within that series where there is a lesbian a situation.
As written by a white writer.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Okay, So then the gay and lesbian community was saying, well, why couldn't that be in there? Damn it, we don't got, you know, I'm so happy they didn't do this. I'm not saying this against gay and lesbians, but damn, the thing is this, Brother Frank, the thing is this, in African culture, and I'm trying to be as clear as I can be, yeah. homosexuality in African culture is not an issue. In fact, it was introduced into African culture. There is nothing about African culture about homosexuality.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
You see, especially in ancient African culture, in terms of Kemet, Pont, Nubia, contemporary mm-hmm. civilizations of Mali, Ghana, Songhai, Benin, Zimbabwe, there's no thing about homosexuality in these cultures,
mm-mm.
in these civilizations. Mm-mm. It's European. It
yes,
begins
yes,
with
exactly.
the Greek. It begins with
Greek
the Greeks.
History, when you go to Caesar, Greek, the Romans, homosexuality has always been more prevalent among the Europeans.
Yes.
It's always been them. As we don't realize, we're in a European dominant society, so they impose their value system onto us.
Yes.
But that's them. Yes. Yeah. It was foreign to the Africans.
Right.
It was the Romans, the Greeks,
the
Europeans did that.
And so,
Army, they would have a boy they take with them, and they would have sex with that boy.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just a couple of tidbits before we get off into this. Also, to remember, I had that article that I wanted to read that
yes.
I sent you. So we can read that. It'll only take yeah. about a few minutes, and we can further discuss that. But very quickly, in the Greek,
yeah.
they even had, you know, so they say the Olympics begin with
yeah.
Greek and Athens. And,
yeah.
and the reality is that these men would take boys with them and
yeah.
do all these exercises and all these stuff. Women were not allowed. In fact, women were alienated. Turned off.
Yes.
Some of these women went to the island of Lesbo.
Mm-hmm.
The island of Lesbo came into view again recently, within the last few years, because people who were escaping Syria and so forth were trying to go to Greece. And they landed on the island of Lesbo before they could get processed. Wow. The island of Lesbo. That's where that term comes from. And then also, too, all these young boys. In fact, whether you want to call it Odysseus or Ulysses, who turned his son over to Mentor. Mm-hmm. That was his name. And he was having intercourse with his son, Mentor.
Yeah. You know?
And that's why they say, if you talk about getting a mentor, you got to understand, you know, what that really means in terms of Greek society, you know.
Wow.
It's deep. Yeah, wow. It's deep. It's deep.
Mentioned, never heard that one before. Yeah. Very interesting.
It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're going to read this article, and the article is very interesting. The article is titled Black Panther is not the movie we deserve. Black Panther is not the movie we deserve. And the writer is Christopher, and it came on the website of Boston Review, and the author, get it together here, is Christopher LeBron. He's the author. Black Panther is not that movie we deserve. Black Panther, the most recent entry into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, has been greeted with the breathless anticipation that its arrival will change things. The movie features the leader of a fictional African country who has enough wealth to make Warren Buffett feel like a financial piper, and enough technological capacity to rival advanced alien races. The change that the movie supposedly heralds is African empowerment to effectively change racist narratives. This is a tall order, especially in the time of Trump, who insists that African Americans live in hell, and wishes that these black son of a bitches, football players, would get fired for protesting police violence. What makes it a real shame that Black Panther, a movie unique to its black star power, and its many thoughtful portrayals of strong black women, depends on a shocking devaluation of American African men. This is deep. He says that with all its real, what makes it a real shame that this movie, in its uniqueness, in all its star power, in its many characters and portrayals of strong American African women or African women, depends on a shocking devaluation of the American African man. And let's go further. To explain my complaint, I need a review of some key plot turns, and it's a spoiler alert. Wakanda is a fictional nation in Africa, a marvel beyond all marvels. Its stupendous wealth and technological advancements beyond anything the folks at MIT labs could dream of. The source of all wonder is vibranium, a substance miraculous in ways that the movie does not even bother to explain. But so far as we understand, it is a potent energy source as well as an unmatched rival mineral. A meteor rich in vibranium, which crashed years and ages ago into the land that would become Wakanda, made Wakanda so powerful that the terrors of colonialism and imperialism passed it by. Using technology to hide its good fortune, the country plays the part of a poor third world African nation. In reality, it thrives, and its isolationist policies protect it from anti-African racism. The Wakandans understand events in the outside world and know that they are spared. This triumphant lord, vibranium, and the Wakandan's secret history and superiority are more than imaginative window dressing. They go to the heart of the mistaken perception that Black Panther is a movie about black liberation. In Black Panther, T'Challa, which is played by Chadwick Boseman, has risen to the throne of Wakanda. We know that his father, T'Chaka,
The previous king died in a bomb attack. T'Challa worshiped his father for being wise and good and wants to walk in his footsteps. But a heartbreaking revelation will sorely challenge T'Challa's ideal image of his father. The movie's initial action sequence focuses on criminal partnership between arms dealer Klaus, the Caucasian, and Eric Killmonger, played by Michael B. Jordan. They both seek vibranium, but for different reasons. Klaus is trying to profit from Wakanda's wonderful material. Killmonger is trying to make his way to Wakanda to make a bid for the throne. He believes he is the rightful king. Killmonger, it turns out, is T'Challa's cousin, orphaned by T'Chaka's murder of Killmonger's father, T'Chaka's younger brother, N'Jabu. Why did T'Chaka kill his brother? N'Jabu was found with stolen vibranium. He was found with stolen vibranium. The motive for the theft is where the tale begins and where the story of African wonderment starts to degrade. We learn that N'Jabu was sent to the United States as one of Wakanda's war dogs, a division of spies that the recluse nation dispatches to keep tabs on the world it refuses to engage in. This is precisely N'Jabu's problem. In the United States, he learns of the racism that American Africans face, including mass incarceration and police brutality. He soon understands that his people have the power to help all African people, and he plots to develop weapons using vibranium to even the odds for American Africans. This is radical stuff. The Black Panther, the political party that is taken to a level of potentially revolutionary efficiency. T'Chaka, however, insists N'Jabu has betrayed the people of Wakanda. He has no intentions of helping any African people anywhere. For him and most Wakandans, it's Wakandan first. N'Jabu threatens to aid to T'Chaka and then kills N'Jabu. The murder leaves Killmonger orphaned. However, Killmonger has learned of Wakanda from his father, N'Jabu, living in poverty in Oakland, California. He grows up to become a deadly soldier to make good on his father's radical aim to use Wakanda's power to liberate African people everywhere by force if necessary. By now, viewers have two radical images in front of them. An immensely rich and flourishing advanced African nation that is sealed off from Caucasian colonialism and supremacy, and a few African Wakandans who, with a view of global African solidarity, who are determined to use Wakandans' privilege to emancipate African people. These images could be made to reconcile, but the movie's director and writer, Ryan Coogler, makes viewers choose. Killmonger makes his way to Wakanda and challenges T'Challa's claim to the throne through traditional ritual of combat. Killmonger's decisive defeat T'Challa and moves to ship weapons globally to start the revolution. In the course of Killmonger's swift rise to power, however, Coogler muddles his motivation. Killmonger is the revolutionary willing to take what he wants by any means necessary, but he lacks any coherent political philosophy. Rather than the enlightened radical, he comes across as the black thug. Wait a minute, what happened here? I tell you, sometimes, Brother Frank, I kid you not, I'm on the computer and it just jumped off on me. I was like, wait, what? What happened? This ain't the first time this has happened to me. And some could make the argument that, this is by design. I would hope not, but hey, you never know. Let's see if we can do this right. No. I'm going to get to it in a second. I just have to get back. I appreciate the patience, family. man. Okay. Man. Okay. So here we go. And we got a little bit. Okay. By now, viewers have two radical images in front of them. An immensely rich and flourishing advanced African nation that is sealed off from Caucasian colonial rule and supremacy, and a few African Wakandans with a vision of global solidarity who are determined to use Wakanda's privilege to emancipate African people. These images could be made to reconcile, but the movie's director and writer, Ryan Coogler, makes us choose. Killmonger makes his way to Wakanda and challenges T'Challa's claim to the throne through traditional ritual of combat. Killmonger decisively defeats T'Challa and moves to ship weapons globally to start the revolution. In the course of Killmonger's swift rise to power, however, Coogler muddles his motivation. Killmonger is the revolutionary, willing to take what he wants by any means necessary, but lacks any coherent political philosophy. Rather than the enlightened radical, he comes across as the black thug from Oakland, hell-bent on killing or killing for killing's sake. Indeed, his body is marked with a scar for every kill he has made. The abundant evidence of his efficiency does not establish Killmonger as a hero or villain so much as a receptacle for trophies of inner city gangsterism. In the end, all comes down to the contest between T'Challa and Killmonger that can only be read one way. In a world marked by racism, a man of African nobility must fight his own blood relative whose goal is the goal to liberate African people. In a fight that takes a shocking turn, T'Challa lands the fatal blow to Killmonger, lodging a spear into his chest. As the movie uplifts the African noble at the expense of the American African man, every crash principle of modern African respectability politics is upheld. In 2018, a world home to both movement for African lives and a president who identifies white supremacy as fine people, we were given a movie about African empowerment where the only redeemed Africans are African nobles. They safeguard virtue and goodness against the threat, not of the Caucasian or the European, but a threat by an American African man, the most dangerous person on the planet. Man, that's deep. Even in a comic book movie, American African men are relegated to the lowest rung of political regard. So low that the sole Caucasian leading character in the movie, a CIA operative, Ross, gets to be a hero who helps Wakanda. A Caucasian man who trades in secrets and deception is given the better turn than American African man whose father was murdered by his own family and who is left by the family and nation to languish in poverty. The brother says, now that's racist. We could hope that this age of American African or African superheroes represents the thoughtful commentary on U.S. racism rather than the continuation of it. Black Panther is not the first prominent attempt to diversify the cinematic Caucasian superheroes and thus not the first to be disappointing. After Netflix Daredevil affirmed a strong television market for heroes, the media company moved to develop shows for other characters that populate the comics. Jessica Jones, a Caucasian heroine with critical success. It handled its tough female protagonist intelligently. That show introduced the character of Luke Cage, Michael Caller, an indestructible American African man. When Netflix announced that Cage would have his own show, the anticipation was intense. A bulletproof American African man in the age of Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown. And he would wear a hoodie and fight police. Instead, we got a trepid, depicted, Harlem poverty, particularly a consequence of institutional racism, but more closely tied to the greedy expressed by his two of his big, bad black buddies, Black Mariah, Afri Woodard, and Cottonmouth, Missala Ali. But there was not the, but that was not the worst of it. The ultimate evil is the show's first and only season is Willis Stryker, another African man who Luke Cage must defeat. Stryker is not only an American African villain, but Cage's adopted brother. Cage must beat his brother to a pulp, just as Panther must kill his cousin. Instead of fighting the cracker, we fight each other. The offenses don't end there. If one surveys the Marvel Cinematic Universe, one finds the main villains, even those far from destructive ones like Killmonger, die infrequently. They are formerly enemies who live to challenge the hero again and again. A particularly pointed example is Loki, the brother of Thor, the god of thunder. Across the Thor and Avengers movies that featured him, Loki is a single-handedly responsible for calculating misery and damage. His power plays leads to an alien invasion that nearly levels all of Manhattan. Yet Thor cannot seem to manage any more violence against Loki than slapping him around a bit and allowing other heroes to do the same, even as Loki tries to kill Thor. Loki even gets his turn to be a good guy in a recent movie. Thor, Ragnarok. Loki gets multiple unearned chances to redeem himself no matter what damage he has done. Killmonger, however, will not appear in another movie. He does not get a second chance. His black life did not matter, even in a world of flying cars and miracle medicine. Why? Perhaps Killmonger's main dream for American African people or African people everywhere decisively earns him the fate of death. I repeat, perhaps Killmonger's main dream to free African people everywhere decisively earns him the fate of death. We know from previous Marvel movies that Killmonger's desire for revenge is not necessarily the condition to eliminate him. Locally, Loki seems permanent in that proof. My claim that Killmonger's American African life does not matter is not hyperbole. It is a macabre scene meant to be touching. Black Panther carries Killmonger to a plateau so that he could see the sun set on Wakanda before dying. With a spear stuck in his chest, he fulfills his wish to appreciate the splendor his father described when Wakanda seemed a fairy tale to him. T'Challa offers Wakanda's technology to save Killmonger's life. It has saved the Caucasian CIA agent earlier in the film. But Killmonger recalls his slave heritage and tells Panther he'd rather die than live in bondage. He knows the score. He knows that Panther will incarcerate him, as it is disproportionately common for American African men to be incarcerated. The silence that follows seems to last an eternity. He is the chance for the movie to undo its racist sins. T'Challa can be the good person he desires to be. He can understand that Killmonger is part of the product of American racism and T'Chaka's cruelty. T'Challa can realize that Wakanda has been hoarding resources and come to understand with Killmonger that justice may require violence. If, as a last resort, after all, what else do comic book heroes do but dispense justice with their armored fist and laser rifles? Black Panther does not flinch. There is no reconciliation. Killmonger yanks the spear out of his chest and dies. The sun sets on his body as it does on Michael Brown. It's fair to wonder whether the movie merely reflects the political politics of the comic books that serve as its inspiration. Yes and no. In the movie, Killmonger's relationship to T'Challa is as the comic book canon portrays it. Killmonger is a deadly killer in the comics as in the movie. And he is also extremely intelligent, studying at MIT to understand the technology he's going to deploy. In the movie, Killmonger's only skill is killing.
If Coogler intended to make Killmonger a hood-born genius, he failed very badly. In the comics, Killmonger dies at Black Panther's hand, but Killmonger dies long after he's come to life in Wakanda, a bit under the veil of deceit, before attempting a coup. The comic thus opens and ultimately rejects the opportunity to save Killmonger to fight another day, as Loki is repeatedly done. The movie completely forecloses this possibility, which is odd since we can all be fairly certain that there will be a sequel. I bet you there will be a sequel. You know it. The alternative storyline might have satisfied. I can't help think of Claw, a Caucasian, a mainline villain in the comics who lives as long infamous life. He would have been a perfectly good villain to motivate the movie's attempt at wokeness. In the comics, there is a bad blood between Claw and the Wakanda royal lineage, which is, of course, that one brother who played in Get Out. Claw's Nazi grandfather died at the hands of Chanda, an earlier Wakandan king and panther. In Claw, we had a Caucasian villain whose bloodline is embedded with the sins of racism. Ramona, played by the never-aging Angela Bassett, is temporarily misplaced in the movie. In the comic canon, T'Challa takes the mantle of the Black Panther while Ramona, T'Challa's stepmother, is being held captive by a Caucasian magistrate in apartheid South Africa. That's in the comics. If Coogler had all been interested in making Panther a symbol of racial reparations, he could have easily placed Claw in South Africa, even post-apartheid, and then rescued Ramona with Claw in the way. Could have been driven the narrative. Ramona is a prominent in the movie, but she does not animate the movie's central drama. Instead, Black Panther is set on a course to kill off his cousin in his first outing, suggesting yet another racist trope, the friction between American African families has a microcosm of Black communities' inability to come together. I'm going to stop there. The brother has more to it, but I'm going to stop there so we can go ahead and get off into this dialogue because we don't have that much time left. I love what the brother wrote. And then I've seen a couple of other pieces online as well, Brother Frank, when people are trying to describe what they're seeing in this movie.
Yeah.
And let me just say very quickly, then you can go ahead. But when we talked, because you saw the movie before I did, when we talked this past weekend, because you saw it in its opening, mm-hmm. I hadn't heard anything. I hadn't read anything. And if you remember our conversation, I was shocked. I was elated about Killmonger and his character talking about what has happened to us globally. And then when I saw the movie, how they portrayed him, you know, even though he had that mindset, it would be hard to cheer for him because, you know, he was just mean-spirited, you know? I mean, he was hateful because of what had happened to him. So it wasn't like I want to do this because I see the evilness. I just want to kill for killing's sake, as the article stated as well, you know. And so it now becomes easier to cheer for T'Challa, you know, and to cheer for Wakanda, even though at the end of the movie, you know, T'Challa goes to Oakland, because now he knows the truth about what happened, how his father killed his uncle, his own brother, because of trying to steal vibranium. And he wants to do some things in the community. You know, he said he bought up some abandoned buildings and going to turn them into places where, you know, people can get help and education and so forth. And then at the very end, after some credits go, there's a scene at the UN where at the UN, he's saying that I want to open up Wakanda to the world. I want to help the world. This, to me, is kind of you go ahead, Brother Frank.
Yeah, that after credit scene, which I found to be the worst part, I didn't agree on. Because what he was actually saying was, okay, I'm going to share my technology with the oppressors. You know? And so I must admit, sometimes when you're watching something, you're seeing it from your own knowledge also. So I do see what the brother was saying in terms of that our black ideology was embodied in a villain. It was embodied in a villain. And if someone's not conscious, they might turn around and become self-hating, hating the ideology of Killmonger.
Right.
But however, I still enjoy the fact that they placed it in there.
Yes, I do.
I didn't see Black Panther as heroic. I saw Black Panther as, for lack of a better word, I saw him as a coon.
Wait a minute. Whoa.
Never felt the go ahead. Yeah.
Brother Frank, I want you to repeat that because for our listeners, you saw Black Panther as a what?
A coon.
Wow.
Black Panther, he was a coon in the film. and the biggest coon portion of the film was at the end, after he was told about the oppressors around the world oppressing black people. At the end, goes for the UN to all these white people and says, I'm going to share my technology with you. So in the end, he's going before the UN and says, I'm going to share my technology with the oppressors. So we must understand, because the film is in the Western world and they control it, they always place their narratives in there, and that was their narrative. And we recognize that when we're hearing Black Panther, we're getting a narrative that's always served the white power structure. And that's why Black Panther, the hero, was given the ideology that served them. For example, a lot of people make a comparison to the characters as a Malcolm X and Dr. King. And they're calling the villain Malcolm X and the hero Dr. King. And that same ideology is the same reason why we have a holiday for Dr. King and Malcolm X is always marginalized. Because the ideology of Dr. King, or how they've exploited and distorted the idea of Dr. King, has been exploited and propagated because they want us to make us more passive. Be like Dr. King, be like Dr. King. And the revolutionary ideology of Malcolm X is pushed away. Malcolm X is not even recognized fully in our schools. It is we who celebrate him. We who keep his memory alive, but not the white institution, you know? So in the film, we saw the same thing. We saw the ideology that served the oppressor was placed in the embodiment of the hero, Black Panther. And the ideology of ours, our ideology, and that is liberating for us, was villainized, dehumanized in the character of Killmonger. Now, myself being conscious, I still gravitate towards Killmonger. But I do recognize and I see those ingredients of how he was villainized, how he portrayed as a thug, how there would be those who would be repulsed by his liberation ideology because he was embodied of a thug. That's the white man's programming. That's the propaganda that's in there. But for those of us who are already conscious, I believe that for the first time ever, the ideology, although they tried to vilify it, they placed the ideology, the black liberation ideology, on a platform that's being seen globally, that's being heard globally. And I think that was powerful because in a sense, for the first time, many black people, those of us who are awakened, we saw our ideology somewhat being affirmed on the big screen. You know?
Right.
So,
I agree.
So even though it's the white man's propaganda, I think it's sort of overplayed its card, but our ideology still shows in that film. But because I met black people who were hating on Killmonger and sitting despised by him, I do see those who are weak-minded, those who are not conscious, it may reconfirm their mental state, you know, their mental imprisonment. So right. I do see that.
Well, see, the bottom line is, you know, when they make movies, they make them with the intent of, when they show them to you, for you to like this character and hate this character. That's by the intent.
Even in the Pentagon, there is a section in the Pentagon that deals with the financing of movies. Yes, the Pentagon financed movies. Because people understand that many of the values of our society come through movies. The government's been doing it since back in the day. They do finance movies. And they put propaganda in these movies. I will give you the worst propaganda I've seen was Blood Diamonds. Have you seen Blood Diamonds?
Yes, I did.
Blood Diamonds was a white man's propaganda.
Yes,
team.
I agree.
People don't realize why it is. When the stories came about Blood Diamonds and the story started spreading, people started buying less diamonds from a certain region, and the sales of diamonds dropped. So they created the movie Blood Diamonds, and in the movie, the villains in the movie were the black people.
Right.
It was all black people.
Right.
And at the end of the movie, they had there was even a scene where the star lead was gave monologue, and in the monologue he says, "I must admit, we were much better when the white man was controlling us." That was actually in the film.
Yeah.
I said, oh my God! He's giving a monologue, and the monologue he's saying, "You're better off when the white man had us." It was said, "We are our own worst enemy."
Yeah.
At the end of the film, they showed the African. Go ahead.
And that's still being played today. When you looked at what happened in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
What happened in Zimbabwe, when the dude took over, once they deposed the lion, Mugabe, that they said, we're going to return some of the farms back to the Caucasians. And they had a scene on national TV showing around the world where these Caucasian men were walking up to their farm and all of these Africans coming to greet them, hugging, celebrating. And then the dude said, we want to once again be part of the British Commonwealth. I'm like, psh, man.
He is pretty crazy.
But see, when you understand the dynamics of European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege, then nothing should ever surprise you when you understand it. Because Neely Fuller said it best. If you do not understand white supremacy, how it functions, how it operates, everything else you think you understand will only confuse you. And I say that we are so confused that we're confused in our confusion. And that's how confused we are.
So true. And the ignorant are ignorant of their own ignorance.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's really true. You know?
Well, my brother.
Having said that, I always emphasize when I'm speaking is we must educate ourselves about the white man's propaganda and his psychological warfare, his social engineering programs, because that's the only way we can counter this.
Right. You got to know it.
Before we can do anything, we have to regain our minds.
Right.
And to regain our minds, we have to recognize the system that's being used to manipulate us. We have to have a concise understanding of what has been done to us so that we can overcome it.
And that's why I appreciate you being on this program. That's why I implore those who are listening to go to The Black Matrix. Go to the website, The Black Matrix. The Black People Matrix.com. Brother, I appreciate it. We're about to close.
I appreciate you, my brother.
No, I'm going to tell you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that because this program, I close this program with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the mind, but also the mine, because once our minds are free, then the mineral wealth that are under the feet of African people, like vibranium, will be under African control. I thank you so much, Brother Frank. I appreciate you.
I thank you for having me.
All right. So, dear brothers, I hope you have a good day. I look forward to seeing you or hearing from you, hopefully on Friday, this Friday.
Great.
And that you have a good day. Shem Hotep.
You too, my brother.
You too, my brother. Thank you. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Have a blessed and wonderful day, dear brothers and sisters. And remember, free your mind. If you free your mind, guess what? Your ass will follow. Oh, peace, family.